So this is, and I think follows along, disclosure, right? So what happens here? This particular case, we have a debtor who filed for bankruptcy and didn't list a $250,000 loan that she loaned to someone prior to the bankruptcy. After her discharge, she tried to go sue the person for her $250,000. Makes sense? But she didn't disclose it on the schedule. And also in her bankruptcy, the trustee sued her on a 727 discharge violation because she didn't disclose other items. So this was sort of a bad debtor double over, not disclosing what they're supposed to disclose. And the court, the Fifth Circuit, found that she had the opportunity to amend. The trustee found some assets. She amended, listed those, and then still didn't disclose. So I think this is, again, goes along one of these cases that disclosure is everything, right? And especially in sort of the consumer practice where you have clients that come in and, you know, they don't tell you about every loan they gave to their brother or their friend or things of that nature. And we see it a lot. So I thought this case was important in the sense that you really, on your intake side and sort of a practice tip side, I think this shows you really have to go through, hey, did you loan any money to your friends? Did you get any medical procedures? Because we don't know what's going to happen in the future. And if you didn't disclose it up front, it can really affect you down the way. So I think that this case was really important for that reason, and it's a good reason.
Yeah, so the Fifth Circuit remains consistent in their application of judicial estoppel and also in reminding us of the importance of accuracy in your schedules. Mm-hmm. Aaron.
Yes.
You've got equitable mootness and statutory mootness in a Fifth Circuit decision. Nicely written decision. I thought a really interesting and well-written decision from Judge Costa, right?
Yeah, I stress this anytime I talk about it because I read a lot of opinions. I really like those concise, well-written opinions, and this is a good example of what I think is good writing. Let me get into the substance, though, because there's some practical issues for us now on any side of the commercial or even consumer practice when you're dealing with selling assets, settling with parties, or objecting to sales and settlements. So the words that we put up there and the words that you'll have to know from now on are mutually dependent. And that's important because you'll also note that that doesn't appear in the bankruptcy code anywhere. So I tried to look up just very quickly what that might mean. Of course, it's not in the Black's Law Dictionary either, so I did what any millennial would do, which is Google it. Here's what I came up with. Mutually dependent is of an unhealthy psychological relationship in which one person perpetuates another's addiction or harmful behavior. Synonyms include addicted, hooked, interdependent, attached, interconnected, slavish trust, and unhealthy confidence.
That's like me and Demetra together.
Indeed.
With that context, let's discuss what happened in the Sneed decision. This was the Fifth Circuit decision was an appeal of an order approving both a sale under 363 and a settlement under Rule 9019. Factually, the debtor owned two shipyards. The reorg, it was initially a Chapter 11. It wasn't going well. A trustee was appointed. The trustee sued the principal of the debtor, a guy named Martin Sneed, and actually it was his probate estate, as well as some other family members based on what Judge Costa described as fraudulent activities. Importantly, though, the probate estate had a counterclaim, and actually said, well, we own one of those two shipyards. That complicates things. So operations at the shipyard, at both of the shipyards, ceased. Case was converted to Chapter 7. So now you have a trustee who's suing the debtor's former principal and family members, also trying to monetize the tangible assets, one of which the title's in dispute. In comes a buyer, Sanjak Marine. They're the only buyer for these two shipyards, apparently. They're not operating anymore. Sanjak says, I'll buy it for $15 million, but you need to go clear up that title issue with the probate estate. So the trustee has to make a hard decision. Trustee has to decide, do I take the money on the table and then settle on unfavorable terms, or do I roll the dice and litigate and see what I get, even though I may never sell these assets because I've never had a chance to sell this. Trustee did what a trustee does and takes the conservative route. It settles. You have one objection from an unsaid. I'll stop here because I want to mention, if you haven't read the opinion, there's a really good drawing in the opinion that simplifies the way that the money was going to flow under the sale and settlement. You've got the debtor in the middle. You've got quadrants with Sanjak on one side, Sneed on the other side, a dip lender, secured creditor, and then a nice diagonal line with the property taxes getting paid. Good chart would make anyone who likes their giant blow-ups very proud. It did draw an objection from one unsecured creditor that didn't like the flow of assets or the flow of money coming from the settlement. The court overruled the objection, approved the sale and the settlement, and here's where we get important. New Industries was the creditor. They appealed the order. They did not obtain a stay pending appeal, and this is going to become important later. We get up to the Fifth Circuit. The trustee moves to dismiss. The appeal is moot. So now with this background, I'm going to throw it out to the panel. We have a single transaction coming from a Chapter 7. Is this equitably moot?